The hour of 4:30 having arrived, I will call to order the Finance Committee meeting of Monday, February 17th, 2025, and ask staff to please call the roll.
Council President Figueroa Cole.
Here.
Alder Verveer.
Here.
Alder Curry.
Here.
Alder Madison.
Here.
Alder Evers.
Here.
Alder Rummel.
Present.
Mayor Quorum.
Thank you. Our first item is general public comment, of which we have none. So we'll move on to disclosures and recusals. Are there any disclosures or recusals from members of the body on today's agenda? Seeing none, we'll move on then to the consent agenda. We have a registrant wishing to speak on item 15. Are there other items? Oh, and excuse me, we have one discussion item, item 19. Are there other items that members of the body would like to have excluded from the consent agenda at this time? Alder Verveer?
Mayor.
Alder Verveer, we can't hear you for some reason.
Thank you, Mayor. Can you hear me?
There you go. Yes.
I have a question or two for agenda item 16, please.
Item 16.
Thank you.
Alder Madison.
Thanks, Mayor. Also, agenda item 18 with just a couple questions.
And item 18. All right. President Figueroa Cole.
Madison got it. Thank you.
Okay. So at the moment, then, we would exclude items 15, 16, 18, and 19 from the consent agenda. Any additional exclusions? All right. Seeing none, then, President Figueroa Cole, on the consent agenda, a motion, please.
Move to adopt the consent agenda.
Second. Is there a second? Moved and seconded to adopt the consent agenda. Is there any objection to recording unanimous vote in favor of the items on the consent agenda and the recommendations therein? Seeing no objection, we will adopt that vote. And that will take us to item 15. Item 15 is Legistar 87067, authorizing the City of Madison to apply to the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources for a Ready for Reuse Brownfields Cleanup Zero Interest Loan in an amount not to exceed $329,000 for the purpose of assisting in the remediation of contaminated soil at Huxley Yards at 2007 Roth Street. On item 15, we have one registrant wishing to speak. Jennifer Argelander of District 12. Do we have Jennifer? Jennifer, you should be able to unmute yourself. There might be a prompt that's hidden under a window. We can't unmute you on our side. Again, Jennifer, if you are there, you should have a prompt that asks you to unmute yourself. Is there any objection to moving on to item 16 and coming back to 15 to give Jennifer a moment? All right, seeing no objection, we'll come back to item 15. Item 16 is Legistar 86954, authorizing the mayor and city clerk to execute a non-competitive purchase of services contract with the Welch Group for Government Affairs and Strategic Advocacy Services for 1 year with the option of 2 1-year renewals. On item 16, President Figueroa Cole, a motion, please.
Move to adopt.
Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded to adopt. Questions? Alder Revere?
Thank you, Mayor. I see we are joined today by some representatives of the Welch Group. I believe Jim Steinecke and Peter Welch are with us. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yep, thank you. So I have a question or two for either or both of those gentlemen, whoever would like to answer. So my question largely centers around conflicts of interest and how you would handle those, in assuming that the council agrees with the hire of your firm to handle much of our legislative liaison work at the state. So if I could, just a bit of a preamble. Mayor, when you let me know a couple of weeks ago that you and your chief of staff, after thorough vetting, were going to be recommending that the Welch Group be retained by the city, I said, as you recall, excellent choice in terms of their effectiveness, and immediately thought back to their effectiveness as it unfortunately worked against, in my estimation, the better interests of our community as it related to landlord-tenant law. And so if I could just use specifically the example of your firm's ongoing representation of the Apartment Association of South Central Wisconsin, an entity that by all means deserves representation at the Capitol, and your effectiveness that in representing them, I think, is quite proven. But the reason I remember that so well is because many ordinances that I had sponsored over the years were preempted back in 2011 by the landlord preemption bill, and then 7 years later, the severe limits on housing inspections that the city and other municipalities in the state can engage in was certainly troubling. So assuming that we do engage in this relationship with the Welch Group, gentlemen, could you explain how you would work so that if we ask you to perhaps represent us in opposing legislation or budget amendments, initiatives that some of your clients might have in mind? Again, might want to use the Apartment Association as an example, how that would be handled internally in your office.
Sure. Happy to answer that. I appreciate the question. It's something that we discussed with the mayor and Sam in some of our initial meetings. Currently, I am personally representing the Apartment Association of South Central Wisconsin. If our relationship moves forward, I'll be personally representing Madison, I will no longer be representing the Apartment Association of South Central Wisconsin to avoid any conflict there. It is one area that we did discuss early on about, you know, that's an area that would be difficult for us to represent the city. But I wouldn't be representing AASCW going forward as long as we had a contract with the city.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that, Leader Steinecke. So just so I understand what you're saying, obviously it's clear that you would be one of our registered lobbyists if we proceed with the engagement, and you would no longer be registered on behalf of the Apartment Association. With that said, would that mean that you or others in your office could not ethically lobby on our behalf, the city's behalf, if it was in contrary to what your colleagues in the office are pursuing on behalf of the Apartment Association? I'll give one other example if you allow this, Mayor. Sure. So as you recall, Mayor, when we discussed this a few weeks ago, I had mentioned that the Apartment Association has recently been, and this was publicized, this isn't a secret, but lobbied the UW Board of Regents in opposition to moving forward with any state enumerations of additional residential hall beds on the UW-Madison campus. Is that, Leader Steinecke, using that example? So if we asked you, and you are our registered lobbyist, to work against, to work in favor with UW-Madison Administration Board of Regents system to support the creation of additional student beds on campus property, is that something you could do, or would you be conflicted even if you're not individually the registered lobbyist.
Yeah, I wouldn't be working in coordination with the apartment association on that matter, but we wouldn't, is my understanding in our initial conversations with the mayor and Sam, you know, we made it pretty clear that that would be the one area of policy that would be kind of removed from our ability to, you know, to work on behalf of the city.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for clarifying that. I appreciate that. When I looked at the Wisconsin Ethics Commission's, you know, most recent registrations for your firm, and they obviously are very wide and varied, and a lot of associations and clients that I can't imagine we would ever have any conflicts with. But the other one that stood out to me upon cursory review was gun safety legislation. Not that there's any chance in the world that gun safety preemption will likely be overturned in the legislature anytime soon. But could I ask you on that issue, is that something that you could comment on, specifically gun safety legislation?
Yeah, that was one area that we didn't discuss. I do currently represent the Wisconsin Firearm Owners. However, if that became a conflict down the road, we could certainly discuss that with the city and figure out a path forward. We have, as you're probably aware, we have a number of lobbyists within our firm that can, you know, that we share clients. Some are clients that we have on our own. Some are shared. So if it became a conflict at some point down the road, we could certainly discuss that with the city and figure out a path forward that made sense for everybody.
Yeah, thank you. Are there any other, I don't want to put words in your mouth, in terms of, you said that landlord-tenant law is an area that we might clearly have a conflict on. Are there any other areas, if I could ask, that you and your colleagues have identified at the Welch Group, or was landlord-tenant regulation really the main areas where we wouldn't have common ground, specifically with that one client, the Apartment Association of South Central Wisconsin? There could be obviously housing legislation where we have parallel agreement on, but were there any other clients besides the Apartment Association, Leader Steinecke?
No, we went through pretty exhaustively our client list, and specifically the ones that I lobby on behalf of, and I can't imagine that there would be a conflict with any of the others. Now, that doesn't say that at some point in the future, you know, something strange might come up that we'd have to discuss and figure out. But at this point, I don't see any other further conflicts outside of that. And if, you know, we always let our clients know that if we have a contract with you and, you know, we have a prospective client coming up, we will notify you of those discussions with that prospective client. And if the city has any issues with that, then, you know, that would prevent us from taking that client. So we're always very upfront and open about any discussions we're having on potential clients to avoid any conflicts.
Thank you. Thanks again. Thank you, Mayor. I have no further questions of the Welch Group representatives. I do probably wish to ask a question of Your Honor or your Chief of Staff at the appropriate time. Thank you.
Thank you, Alder Rivera. Alder Rummel, questions?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I'm not sure I correctly heard the answer from Mr. Steinecke. I heard him say that he would no longer represent the Apartment Association, but I didn't really hear how he answered the question. Would the firm continue to represent the Apartment Association?
Yes, our firm would continue to represent them. It would be a lobbyist that works separately from me. So it would be Stamena Messick that would be the main point of contact for the Apartment Association.
Can you explain your sort of business strategy of how you silo like different clients, you know, when there might be these kind of conflicts, just so I have a sense of like what's the best practice?
Yeah, I mean, it is a pretty clear delineation if there's ever any conflicts where, you know, we don't discuss those issues internally with lobbyists that are in conflict with somebody that we're representing. So we don't discuss that internally. We have a wall up between the two lobbyists that might be on, you know, that might have the conflict between their clients.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alder. Are there other questions for the registrants on item 16? Seeing none, thank you, Jim. Thank you, Peter. And we'll go then to questions for staff on item 16. Alder Revere?
Yeah, thanks very much, Mayor. So whether you or Sam wishes to answer the question, I was hoping that you would just clarify for us why you have such a high comfort level in terms of the potential conflicts of interest that present themselves looking at the Welch Group's current stable of clients. And then specifically, if I could ask the follow-up just at this point, in the case of where we do have clear lobbying priority that is counter to any of their clients, we could use the Apartment Association again as an example, how would we then have our interests represented if Leader Steinicke, as I understand his response, says we just couldn't represent the city contrary to the Apartment Association, perhaps in specific matters? Would we just attempt to lobby the legislature on our own internally? Would we consider hiring a secondary outside firm? If you could just respond to that as well, please. Thanks.
Sure. Sam, do you want to start?
Sure. Yeah, I'd say it's a totally good and reasonable question, Alder. But it is also the kind of thing that comes up very routinely, as you can imagine. There's a limited number of high-level lobbying firms in a state like Wisconsin or in other states that I'm familiar with, and all of them have fairly significant client rosters, and it's almost inevitable that there's at least some tangential conflict. And obviously, it can, you know, the degree of conflict can range from something where you have a slightly different philosophical approach to where you're literally taking opposite positions on the same bill, the most direct kind of conflict. The way that most, and we talked with a number of lobbying firms, they all have fairly similar internal policies about firewalling, quote unquote, lobbyists who work on potentially, if a conflict comes up, or if they're potentially adverse interests. It's if you're familiar with the legal profession, that comes up quite frequently for lawyers at firms as well. And there's provisions for internal firewalling. And as Leader Steinicke said, folks then are not able to communicate internally. They can't share any privileged information if it's simply a question of folks, different lobbyists having potentially adverse positions on a bill. As you said, if the conflict is profound enough, and this often happens in legal fields too, a firm will have to actually recuse itself from a case, right? And I think we would take it on a case-by-case basis. I would say looking at amongst the client rosters of the various firms that we talked to, the Welch Group had some of the potential conflicts were of the most sort of the least concern in some sense, because they seem most unlikely to manifest. But if, for instance, I think there was a bill where there was such a profound conflict, like they felt they had to recuse themselves, I think we could look at hiring an additional outside firm to step in. It's also worth noting that local officials are allowed to go and to speak to and make state representatives aware of their position on things. So just for instance, I or the mayor or another city department director could go and testify, and has in the past, could go and speak with a legislator or write up a statement about expressing our concerns, could take a position on a bill. So there's multiple means by which we could make our position and make our concerns known, and in general advocate for or against a piece of legislation. And over, you know, the years, I think, without going into too much detail, it's fair to say the mayor and I have both had lots of conversations with our local representatives and with members of various agencies in the governor's office, and made our preferences known without necessarily going through Nick Szavos or going through an outside lobbying firm when we had that in place. So I think, as I said, your question's totally totally reasonable and on point. I think there, you know, it's obviously would be It would not be ideal to have to forego the expert advice of our the Welsh group, but we could certainly. There's a number of ways that we could take a position that even if it was directly adverse and they had to recuse. So that would be how I. Does that answer your question? Is that sort of
yes? Yes. Yeah. You know, thank you, Sam. Yeah, you covered both questions very well. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Alder. Any other questions for staff on item 16? Seeing none, it's been moved and seconded. Is there a discussion on item 16? Alder Revere.
Thank you again, Mayor. Let me just quickly say that I wholeheartedly support your recommendation to hire the Welch Group. I just wanted to make that clear, given the questions that I raised in this meeting. As I said at the outset, and you recall from my immediate reaction when you shared the news with me privately, obviously they have a proven track record of being extremely effective, and I'm very optimistic that they will pursue our interests with great vigor, notwithstanding my concerns about potential conflicts of interest, which, as Sam effectively said, was true of pretty much any high-level firm that you had been considering recommending to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Alder. Is there any further discussion on item 16? Seeing none, it's been moved and seconded. Is there any objection to recording a unanimous vote in favor of item 16? Seeing no objection, we'll record that unanimous vote. And thanks you both, Jim and Peter, for being here. And then unless there's objection, we'll go back to item 15. And item 15 again is Legistar 87067, authorizing the application for a ready-to-reuse brownfields cleanup loan regarding the Huxley Yards property. On item 15, we have one registrant wishing to speak, Jennifer Argelander of District 12. And it looks, Jennifer, like you have managed to unmute.
I have. Thank you. I'm sorry, I was having trouble getting into the meeting. So, yeah, I'm Jennifer Argelander. I'm the co-chair of Sherman Neighborhood Association. And I'm speaking in opposition to Legistar 87067, which authorizes the City of Madison to negotiate a loan contract with Lincoln Avenue Capital. The purpose of this is in assisting with the remediation of contaminated soil on the former Hartmeyer property. Another similar loan was discussed in October, and at that time, we recommended that an independent real estate appraisal of the market value of the developer's three properties on the former Hartmeyer site would be needed before loaning the money to Lincoln Avenue Capital and its affiliates, and that appraisal is also being requested for this new loan. The city needs to do their due diligence and plan for a risk that Lincoln Avenue Capital might default on the loan, and both loans together are close to $1.4 million. Lincoln Avenue Capital has protected its assets by creating three affiliated companies for this housing project. Well, the city needs to protect its interests, too. LAC has overpromised and underestimated the costs of building on a wetland and all the contamination, and has been shortchanging the original design. The third building should not be built if they can't afford to build it safely. And I want to be clear, as the SNA co-chair, that we in the community have repeatedly raised the concern of the serious contamination and the concerns with these buildings, and we are not opposed to development. The city has consistently dismissed our concerns and continued with the intent of building as many housing developments as they can push through. So now it looks like LAC needs a second loan to clean up the contamination. Really? That's what we've been saying. The city's not being a good steward of our tax dollars if you approve this request, especially given that we have had to pay an increase in taxes because of a tax shortage. So I am requesting that you do not approve this loan without an independent real estate appraisal of the market value of this project in order to protect us from the risk of default. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any questions for our registrant? Seeing none, thank you. And President Figueroa Cole, a motion on item 15, please.
Move to adopt.
Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded to adopt item 15. On item 15, are there questions for staff? Alder Rummel.
Thanks. I didn't get my hand up in time to ask the applicant or the Jennifer, but I'll ask staff, like, how has the design changed a lot in the various phases due to the impact of, like, the contamination? Can someone sort of do the big picture of what's going on?
We have Director Mikulajewski here.
Thank you, Alder. So, there were design changes made to the first two buildings that were built. The current application that we're considering with the DNR for the Ready for Reuse program, and I should note that what's before you this evening is a approval to apply for funding. We haven't actually been awarded the funding, and we haven't negotiated the loan agreement with either the developer or the DNR. This is a resolution to authorize us to apply at this point. So when you look at the totality of a project, obviously the environmental contamination impacts the ability for the project to be financially successful. And the reason for this application is that it is to secure DNR funding as a pass-through to the city, and later on in the lifespan of the loan, a city loan, to help support that environmental remediation. To say that the remediation specifically has caused the design of the buildings to change, I'm not sure that those are directly related, but obviously the cost associated with contamination cleanup does impact the overall project financing as a whole.
Thank you. Thank you, man. I mean, I think this fund is really helpful to the city. So it's helped my district. So I see the value of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Alder. Are there any additional questions for staff on item 15? Seeing none, item 15 has been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, item 15 has been moved and seconded. Is there any objection to recording a unanimous vote in favor? Seeing no objection, we'll record a unanimous vote in favor of item 15. That will take us to item 18, which is Legistar 86986, amending the Economic Development Division capital budget for TID 44. By $500,000 to fund small business development programs, and then amending TID 46 by $750,000 to fund the same programs, and TID 51 by $850,000. And the capital budget to transfer funds from TID 51 to the land banking program to fund demolitions of land bank properties at 1810 South Park, 1901 South Park, 814 North Avenue, and 826 North Avenue. On item 18, can I get a motion, please, President Figueroa Cole?
Move to adopt.
Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded to adopt. On item 18, questions for staff? Alder Madison.
Thanks, Mayor. Before a question, I'm just wondering if Matt can give an overview, not necessarily on the land banking portion, but specifically the small business assistance programs. Which programs will be funded? What does that increase the funding to, for example, for the year?
Matt?
Sure. Thank you, Alder. So the small business programs that we're referring to through this resolution are the facade grant program, the commercial ownership assistance program, the building improvement grant program, and the small cap TIF program.
Oops, sorry. And then for those programs, I know we talked a little bit at council about the Park Street location, But do any of the other properties have small businesses currently utilizing them, such as they do over there on Park Street? I haven't had a chance to look at the. So the other buildings mentioned in the item, are they also similar to like Park Street?
So it's, relative.
It's all the same property. It's just different addresses, right?
Gotcha. Yep. So then just to go over again, just to make sure, the programs mentioned, it sounds like each of these programs would be programs, at least that some of the business that I'm aware of on Park Street would be able to utilize. I don't see. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
I want to make sure that I'm understanding that correctly.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Alder. Are there additional questions for staff on item 18? President Figueroa-Cole?
I'm sorry, I got confused. I thought this was a different project. So what is the difference between this particular item and the one that we just discussed on council last Tuesday?
So the one that we discussed at council was the authorization to purchase the property. This item, and Matt will correct me if I'm wrong, is twofold. One, it's amending a number of different TID budgets to fund the programs that Matt outlined. And two, it's allocating funds into the land banking program to fund the future demolition work when we're ready to do that.
Oh. Okay, so I could have saw that I saw, maybe I look at the wrong agenda. Yeah, never mind. That's all I have for now. Thank you.
Thank you. Alder Madison, additional questions?
Yes, I forgot I didn't cross off one more. I don't think I got the total answer. My question is more so, I know what the item, you know, the total that it's asking for to be increased, but what does it bring the total to for each of those programs for funding for this year? So what would it go from what to what?
Yeah, so how we have the suite of small business programs structured is that we don't have a like set amount for each of the individual programs, the facade grant versus the building improvement grant. How it's structured is that we can use this funding for any combination of those programs based on what the demand is from the small businesses in that particular district. In terms of the increase, what I can say is that currently TID 44 and TID 46 do not have any funding for small business development programs. So this would be adding funding to TIDs where that did not historically exist. For TID 51, as noted here, we're increasing our overall budget by $850,000. To be honest, really the reason we're doing that is because of the additional costs that we have relative to purchasing that remaining property as part of the All Metals Triangle and also completing those demolitions. So we need the additional $850,000 of budget authorization so that we have money to do the small business programs. So in that case, we're not really adding $850,000 of new money for small business programs in South Madison. We're just recognizing that in order to be able to fund those programs this year, we need an additional budget authorization.
Perfect. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you, Alder. Any additional questions on item 18? If not, item 18 has been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion on item 18, it's been moved and seconded. Is there any objection to recording a unanimous vote in favor of item 18? Seeing no objection, we'll record a unanimous vote in favor, and that will bring us to item 19, which is Legistar 87210, the 2026 budget calendar and budget process overview. I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that Christine has a presentation for us on this. Christine?
I do. Good afternoon, everyone. It's never too early to start planning for next year's budget. So I do have a very short slide presentation to walk through. I'm just going to walk through what was included in the 2025 budget and do a quick demo of how you can navigate our webpage to get the information you need, review the dates for the 2026 budget calendar, and some planned engagement we have with the Finance Committee and Common Council. So all of the 2025 budget materials are available online. They were published earlier this month. I also reached out to Alder saying that we will be printing a limited number of copies. So if you'd like a hard copy, we're more than happy to provide that. And we always provide copies at the libraries too for the public. So please reach out to me if you haven't already. I included in the slides a few direct links to some useful resources. The first is the operating budget overview. This is about a 10-page summary that has an outline of some of the issues that we faced during the 25 budget development process, including the legislative timeline related to the referendum, the structural deficit, and the impact of the levy, the referendum on some of the budget decisions included in the adopted book. And then if you wanted to go back a little farther in time, you could also find the executive summary and budget outlook page where we provided a bit of context and information about what would happen if the referendum had not passed. Many of the educational materials on the Outlook page are still very relevant because it is a structural deficit. It wasn't a one-time issue. And we will be working on updating it to be more evergreen so that it can be an ongoing resource. One of the key items in the budget overview is the five-year operating plan for the budget. This was the first time we've included something like this in the operating budget. As you all know, the capital budget includes a five-year outlook called the Capital Improvement Plan, or CIP. This year, as part of the budget, we did include an outlook for what the strategy would be for the operating budget to have a sustainable plan for a balanced budget moving forward. And as this graphic demonstrates, the 25 budget relied on the $22 million property tax referendum, as well as some budget efficiencies to be balanced. And then in 2026, we'd be looking at utilizing the additional revenues from the property tax levy referendum, as well as a portion of fund balance, which in the original projection was $4 million. And gradually spending fund balance over the course of the five-year period. It didn't get into too many of the specifics for the upcoming year, but it does give us a framework for how we will be developing the budget in the upcoming year. So looking at 2026, we are just a month out from when we start the capital budget process. So we will have the capital kickoff with agencies on March 18th. That's when we publish our request guidance, as well as a letter from the mayor to all the agencies about the guidelines for what they can include in their budget request. Agencies have 5 weeks to complete this. And then the budget team takes about 2 weeks to review, process, compile all of the data. And we have that information published on the website about 2 weeks after on May 5th. And then it will be introduced to council on September 2nd and go through the process of finance committee briefings, finance committee amendments, and then referred to council. And then on the operating side, we'll kick off the operating budget on June 16th. Similar to capital, we have a 5-week request period. It takes the budget team a few weeks to review all of the information. We'll have requests published online by August 4th, and then the budget will be introduced to council on October 7th and again go through the finance committee briefings, finance amendments, and then to the full common council. I'm going to switch my screens just to quickly walk through some tips on navigating our website. So if you go to cityofmadison.com/finance and navigate to the budget tab, our page is broken out by each of the budget years. So the first thing you'll see is the 26 budget. Right now, it's just a timeline, but as we achieve each of these milestones, these rows will become hyperlinks that will take you directly to the documents relevant to that milestone. So right now, there's not a lot happening, but more to come here. And then if you go to the 2025 budget, the main button is the PDF. This is the 800-page document. It's very large. It can be a little cumbersome to navigate, but it's good for control finding any keywords that you're looking for. I think the better way to navigate the budget is to go to that adopted budget phase, and then you'll see each of the documents as a separate PDF. So if you're interested in a specific agency, like the finance department, you can get the, you know, 5 to 15-page PDF that's a lot more digestible. And then in the overview and summaries, we have this operating budget overview and policies. That's where we have published the operating plan. And as I mentioned, there's information about an overview on ARPA funding and prior year budgets, the legislative process, links to the Legistar files that have all of the amendments. And I think it's just a good resource that summarizes a lot of our information. And finally, I mentioned the budget outlook page. I think a lot of this was built on providing education leading up to the referendum, but many of the issues that are discussed are the same, and the educational materials are still relevant. So Dave and I are working on updating these presentations to be relevant outside of the context of the referendum vote, and we'll be updating these as part of the alder onboarding materials we're preparing. So over the next few weeks, and by the time the next alder class is seated, we'll have all of this updated. So going back to the slides, as I mentioned, the 26th webpage is a quick place to see all of the deadlines. One thing I do want to point out is that we are in the process of procuring a digital budget book software. This was approved as part of one of the reallocations within the finance department budget. I'm really excited about this. There are several tools out there where you can build your entire budget book as a web-based budget. There will be options to print out to PDF, so we can still have hard copies for those who need it. But it's going to be a change because the web version will be the default. I think some things I'm looking forward to is that it will be much easier to navigate. There will be native data visualizations, more charts and graphs that will provide, I think, an easier access point for understanding what's in the budget and some interactive features. We're still in the procurement process, but once we have a vendor under contract and can provide some demos, we'll certainly come to the Finance Committee to preview what you can expect. And then something that's not explicitly on the timeline, but we discussed a lot during the budget development process last year, is that the operating budget always starts with a cost to continue exercise. So this is where the finance department works with every single agency to understand how much it will cost to provide the same level of services next year as this year. So this is where we factor in things like increases to personnel costs from COLA increases. We estimate benefit rate increases, as well as take into account contractually required cost increases. For many of our multi-year contracts, there might be a cost escalator. So we'll factor that all in, as well as put in estimates for debt service. We do not include the cost of expanding services or doing new things, but this is where we get the baseline of where we're starting with the budget. So we start this process. This will be most of April. So we will begin working with agencies at the very end of March into the first half of April. We'll take about 2 weeks where we have these meetings with every agency, and then we'll compile the citywide estimates, including, like I mentioned, cost of living increases, benefits, and debt service are some of the main components. So after May 9th or so, we would expect to have some more information to present to Finance Committee or Council about what we expect the outlook to be for 2026 for the operating budget. Here on this table, I have the upcoming Finance Committee dates. So right now, today, we're doing the budget overview. So our plan is after each of the major milestones of the budget to come back to the Finance Committee to give you a briefing of where we are on the internal city process. So after the capital kickoff with agencies, we will come back to Finance Committee to give you a summary of what is in the guidance. After agencies submit their requests, we'll present a summary to the committee, et cetera. So each of these dates are, we might shift some things a little bit, but you can expect an update after each of the major milestones. And just a few things that we're planning on. As I mentioned, we're working on updating all of our educational materials end of March, early April, so that it's ready for the new class of alders after the April election. We also plan on working with the council office and council leadership in April and May to develop a schedule for briefings of the full Common Council and discuss whether or not we'd want to use any other formats, such as working with CCEC, having discussions with the Committee of the Whole, or some other way of engaging alders and making sure you are aware of the process and getting your input taken in as well. So that's all I have, and we're happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Christine. Questions? Alder Evers?
Thank you, Mayor. First a comment and then a question. I appreciate that the website and materials presented will include information that was developed last year in the run-up to the campaign, part of the campaign for the referendum. So I think it's important to keep that in mind. And I think speaking as someone who's running for re-election, it's clear that folks, this is top of mind. This is the kind of question that we get asked. Well, now that the referendum has passed, and we're still operating under the parameters of an ongoing structural deficit, what do you have in mind to be able to find efficiencies and move forward? And I think that broader understanding needs to continue to be front and center, in a sense, taking the lessons learned and the hard work that you all put together last year and allowing that to move forward. So I want to compliment you on the decision to do that. The question is, will there be ongoing and regular presentations regarding potential impacts that we spoke of at our last meeting, vis-a-vis the federal government, the uncertainty there? Is it possible that would it be reasonable to expect these to show up on a website, or is this the type of information that we should be talking about on a monthly basis, or even at each of our Finance Committee meetings, or even possibly offline in another format? But I'm wondering if we could get regular updates with respect to that kind of information.
Alder Evers, our plan is to come back to the Finance Committee, as we mentioned at your last meeting, on a regular basis, probably every other meeting. But really, it'll be based on information that we might have available.
Well, thanks, Dave. I must have missed that. Yeah, I do think perhaps every other meeting having an update along those lines would be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Alder. Any other questions on item 19? Alder Rummel?
I know that I didn't hear us saying we were planning for any kind of public outreach, but I'm wondering if people think we should do something. I mean, not to the extent we did last year. Obviously, that was in order to explain what we were facing. But it seems like we engaged a lot of people who now know more about the budget than before, and that there seems to be some benefit to something that does that again.
Yeah, I think we're definitely interested in continuing public engagement as well. Prior to last year, we would always have at least two, like, webinar-style public engagement sessions. We're definitely open to having some a mix of in-person, hybrid, using different formats based on some what worked last year. And I think I'd want to work closely with leadership and the council office once things are, you know, everyone is kind of settled in after the April election to start planning that out for the fall.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alder. Any other questions or comments on item 19? If not, thank you, Christine. I know it's a not insignificant amount of work to get everything scheduled. And somehow this is just the beginning. So appreciate you and your staff on all of this, and particularly on the continued updating of the website so folks can stay in touch with the process and get all that information. Item 19 is the last item on our agenda, so a motion to adjourn would be in order.
To adjourn.
Second.
Moved and seconded to adjourn. Is there any objection to recording a unanimous vote in favor of adjournment? Seeing no objection, we stand adjourned. Have a good evening, everyone. Stay warm.